Welcome to the Glastonbury Goddess Conference podcast. I'm your host, Eileen Hale. The Glastonbury Goddess Conference has been offered every year since 1996, celebrating and honouring a different aspect of goddess each year. In this podcast, I will speak to presenters, musicians, ceremonialists, priestesses, and other people involved in this magical event. Enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Goddess Conference podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking to Enfys J. Book, whose passion lies in researching, writing, and teaching about queer Kabbalah. And they are the author of the forthcoming book, Queer Kabbalah, Non-Binary, Gender-Fluid, Omnisexual Mysticism and Magic. And they serve as High Priest of the Fellowship of the Ancient White Stag. Welcome, Enfys.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
It's great to have you here. And of course, you are a guest on this podcast because you're going to do a presentation at the Glastonbury Goddess Conference, and we'll get to that a bit later. But I'd just like to ask you to introduce yourself. Who are you? What do you do in this world?
Well, I am Enfys. I am non-binary, bisexual, queer person. I have a lot of different pieces to my life. Among them, we were talking about this before we went on air. So in addition to writing a book and being one of the co-leaders of a coven here in Maryland in the United States, I also am part of a band that does funny, filthy, feminist fandom folk music. And I also, just keep very busy. I have a day job on top of all of that. So I've got a lot going on.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting. And of course, I really want to hear more about the Kabbalah because, you know, like I'm sure a lot of people have heard the word, like the Jewish tradition Kabbalah, but from what I understand on your website, this is slightly different. Am I right?
So yeah, the type of Kabbalah I work with is called Hermetic Kabbalah, which has some shared history with Jewish mysticism Kabbalah, which is usually spelled with a K instead of a Q. So this is a different stream of working with a similar tool. So there are some pieces that the two practices have in common. There are Hebrew names for the spheres. We have the Tree of Life glyph and Hebrew letters on the paths. But the actual approach to the tool differs if you are working from more the occult side outside of Judaism than within Judaism.
I think I read also that you're Wiccan. And is that connected? Is that the same tradition, or have you kind of woven them together? How does that work?
Yeah, so I'm part of a tradition called the Assembly of the Sacred Wheel, which is a tradition about, coming up on 40 years old here in the Mid-Atlantic region of the U.S. We have 14 different covens. Yeah. And Kabbalah is really intrinsic to what we work with. We refer to ourselves as a syncretic Wiccan tradition. So Wiccan principles underlie everything, but also we have bits of ceremonial magic that we work with as well, including Kabbalah.
It's like I want to know so much more, but I don't even know what to ask. But we might get to all of that. Let me see if I can phrase this, because like you, if I look on your website, it's like queer Kabbalah, and your book is about that as well. So do you? Well, how did you find that and work with kind of the queer in that? Because I know that traditionally I experience the divine, of course, as male, feminine, and feminine and everything in between. But I think that if you look at, traditional pictures of goddess spirituality and Wicca, it looks quite, you know, here's the male and here's the female. And of course, there's everything in between. So how did you kind of find yourself in that? What was your path like to get to where you are in your spirituality?
It was a very interesting road. I also want to clarify, I'm not the first person to consider queer Kabbalah, but I started making the connections on my own and only found out kind of after the fact others have worked with it. But information from others is really, really hard to find. Mm-hmm. There were no books on it before this one. There are no, you know, blogs that I could find. Like, I searched pretty thoroughly. And I think a lot of it may be maintained within traditions or regional classes or something like that. Mm-hmm. But for me, I was working on a Kabbalah project for my second degree work with my tradition. And the more I dug into Kabbalah, the more I started seeing things. I assumed the approach to it, based on the books I was reading, was rather binary. And there's like a masculine pillar and a feminine pillar. And there are a lot of this or that. Mm. But then as I understood the tool more deeply, I was struck by all the fascinating inconsistencies with gender on the tree. Mm-hmm. So, for example, there is a masculine and a feminine pillar, but there's also a pillar between them called the pillar of balance. So I like to call that the non-binary pillar, yeah. A little bit tongue-in-cheek, but it kind of is. It's not like a third, it's not like it's halfway between masculine and feminine. It's kind of like taking those powers, merging and transmuting them into something completely different. So the fact that that's built into this symbol that goes back to the 1600s, I think is rather remarkable. Like, that's our first clue that it is not a binary magical tool. The other piece is there's some fascinating inconsistencies within that whole masculine and feminine pillar construct, with the sphere names have masculine or feminine endings. And I learned this by reading Rachel Pollack's book on Kabbalah. She says, you know, here they have different, you know, masculine or feminine endings. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't match up with whether they're on the masculine or feminine pillar. You have a masculine name on the feminine pillar and vice versa. Then when you dig another layer deep, there are these magical images associated with each of the spheres. And these go back well over 100 years. I think they were developed by the Golden Dawn. And those images also are not consistent with either the sphere's gender name or which pillar it is on. So I began to just sort of dig into these things and thought, well, this is really interesting. And none of this is stuff I created. I did not put these symbols there. They were already there. And so I just found some really interesting pieces in there that I really enjoyed. So I kept pulling on the thread.
Mm. That's really interesting. And I wanted to know also if it was difficult for other people when you kind of started working like this, because I mean, this is not the same, but like the example that I was thinking about was, it was probably 15 years ago, and it was like a women only circle, and there was this trans woman who wanted to come, and it wasn't like the people who held it were like, oh my god, no, you're not allowed. But I remember the talk around and sort of going, what, but she's not a woman, she hasn't got a womb, and what are we going to do, how are we going to deal with this? And you know, because that was the first experience that kind of circle had with a trans woman. And of course now it's hopefully a bit easier, I would hope. But how did you find it sort of in your tradition? Was it welcomed, or how did it work for you?
Generally speaking, I think it's been received very well within my tradition. Our tradition was founded in part by gay men. So there is already some openness to the non-hetero cis normative perspective. So in particular, my mentor, Ivo Dominguez Jr., was one of the early people to validate when I was like, I'm seeing all of this stuff. Am I off base? Am I just not understanding this correctly? And he said, no, I think you're understanding it. Keep pulling on the thread. Mm-hmm. So I did. And generally speaking, I think it's been received well within my tradition.
Mm. Well, that's good to hear, because it's, you know, I'm never sure about different traditions and, you know, their background and mm-hmm. yeah, and just society in general, I guess.
We did have to update our charter because I was the first openly non-binary clergy member. And the way our charter was written is that each coven has to have one male and one female leader. Mm. And when I volunteered to fill the spot of the high priest in my coven and said, you know, if my anatomy is the only thing holding me back from serving in this role, that's kind of silly. Because we also didn't have any other people identified as male in my coven. Mm. And so leadership agreed. They're like, you're right, that is silly. We would like to have you in this role, so we are going to update and say any two people can serve as the leadership of their coven.
That's what I like, actually. I love, you know, when there's not strict rules, when we kind of embrace what is, because that, for me, that's what, you know, my goddess tradition is, and, you know, paganism and everything. For me, it's just about being open to everyone and everything and all the energies around.
So I really appreciate the Goddess Conference's inclusivity in how the conference is run, and was very excited to be part of it.
Mm. Yeah, because I think I was speaking to Marion about that in a couple of episodes ago, about how maybe before people have thought that, you know, this is a women only event, when in fact it's not. So yeah, I'm really glad that that's kind of, that it's perceived like that as well from the outside. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really excited to hear about your book. So do you want to tell us a bit more what it's about, what's in there? Because I just love the name, you know, already. Non-binary, gender fluid, omnisexual, mysticism and magic. What is in there? Please tell me.
So the book has three parts. The first part of the book is an introduction to the concept of queer magic in general and to the Tree of Life in general. One of my frustrations when I was first learning about Kabbalah 10 years ago is that a lot of the literature on it is very dense and difficult to understand. So I wanted to provide people a less complicated intro that gives them the general idea of things, and then they can go to those books to dig deeper. So there's that. And the other thing in the first part is talking about what makes Kabbalah queer. So this is where I go through those interesting gender inconsistencies with the spheres and things like that. In part two, I look at each of the spheres, also known as Sephiroth, and connect them to queer people's stages of life or things that a lot of us tend to go through as queer people. So things like coming out, how you can see that through the lens of the Tree of Life. Various things like, you know, if you come out and suddenly you find you're having negative backlash, you know, there's a place to view that from the tree as well. So, and then in the third part, there are some various Kabbalah workings that people can do to further build their relationship with the Tree of Life.
Wow, it sounds really important and it sounds really interesting. So I'm going to have a look at that when it comes out. When was it, in June?
June 8th.
Yeah. June 8th.
It is pre-orderable now from basically all bookstores.
Great, great. And I'll put that in the show notes as well later on. So I want to ask, like, do you have a connection with Avalon at all?
Only very faintly. I have, you know, of course, in my reading of, you know, paganism, reading up on the goddess and such, I have encountered, but I confess I don't have a deep connection there.
No. And you don't have to. I was just curious.
The goddess who I have connected with the most early on was Artemis from the Greek pantheon. Yeah. I think was my first real introduction to concepts of goddess, and sort of flowered and bloomed from there in other directions.
Yeah, great. And so the conference, so the theme this year is Sovereign Goddess, which is about how she empowers us all to step into our own power. So what can you tell us about what you're offering this year? It's a presentation, am I right?
Yeah, so I was given 20 minutes, and that is an insufficient amount of time to give an introduction to Kabbalah, much less queer Kabbalah.
Yeah.
So as I thought about what I could do with that time, I thought, well, I can tell my story about queer Kabbalah. Mm-hmm. And here is how I got into that. Here's what it means to me as a queer person, because I really feel that Kabbalah is a very authentic tool that queer people can use to see their own identity in their magic. There is a bit of a problem in some Western occult circles where, you know, we tend to draw people from the fringes of society, right? You know, people who have been marginalized in various ways tend to be drawn into paganism, and we want to be welcoming of people from all different walks of life. But if the first thing we do when someone comes into our space is say, hey, and now you've got to put all your magic into these two boxes of male and female and just enjoy, it's not very welcoming. It's a bit of a slap in the face if you are non-binary to like now be asked to fit the same rigid binaries that maybe you're trying to escape in the society at large. So I wanted people to feel like this is a thing that they can use, and a way that teachers of Kabbalah can see it through a different lens and be more inclusive in how they teach.
Yeah, I can imagine 20 minutes is you have to go, to get it all in there.
Exactly.
Well, hopefully you'll get to come back, so you know, we'll get to hear more. I was thinking about the theme and the sovereign goddess and empowerment and everything. And of course, it's so important to find our own power. And I mean, you've spoken about that already, but how do you kind of work with empowerment in your own practice?
So for me, a big part of working in a magical context is about self-empowerment. I want to give a shout out to one of my dear friends, Irene Glass, who's just co-authored a book called Black Feather Mystery School Magpie Training. And that is coming out probably right around the time this podcast does. But it is a witch self-study program that is several weeks long that teaches you the fundamentals of witchcraft. And a lot of it is built around this concept of stepping into your own power. And I think that is just so important. And that concept of bodily sovereignty and personal sovereignty is really critical, because if you end up in, say, a coven that wants to just take your power from you and convince you you are powerless, that's not a healthy place to be. I had some early experiences with that, unfortunately, as I first started exploring magical practice. There were people who wanted to use power over me more than they wanted to help me find my own.
Yeah, and that's really going the wrong way. I love the whole thing about, like you said, stepping into one's own power. I think that's so, well, I'm getting shivers now. And it's like that kind of, that I've been thinking a lot about lately, about taking my space, you know, and not taking anyone else's space. I think I spoke to Lynn about that in the last episode as well, about I have every right to take this. You know, this is my space on earth. And I just, I think working with magic and working with goddess or god or and everything in between kind of can help us to really step into that and not apologize for taking up this space and not apologize for who we are and not waiting for permission. Because I feel like when we're walking this path, we do it with love. So you know, when we talk about not waiting for permission, it's not like stepping over someone. It's like, I'm not waiting for permission to take this space and to work this magic.
Yeah. A couple of books that were very influential on mine that have similar themes to that. Cassandra Snow's Queering Your Craft, which is very much about approaching magic through an intersectional queer lens. And also Misha Magdalene's book, Outside the Charmed Circle, which again is about that approaching magic from a queer context. Both were really transformative for me and laid a lot of the groundwork for what I ended up writing in my book.
Wow. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I'm going to write that down as well. I wanted to know if you have like a daily practice that you do or something that you do on a regular basis that you find is really helpful that you'd like to share?
Oh, definitely. One of the things I recommend in my chapter on Malkuth is the importance of being rooted and being fully present in this incarnation. And to that end, one of the things I do every day is ground and center myself. That really helps me start the day from a good perspective. For a while, the first thing I did each morning was look at social media and I found that was not the best way to start my day. So if I start my day with meditation before I even get out of bed, it sets my brain in a better place. And then I do 10 minutes of gentle yoga, because as I have been getting older, I have found that stretching is not optional if I want to be able to continue to move my body. So I do some gentle stretching exercises, and then I draw a tarot card for the day. Mm. So that's mostly what my daily practice is.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds really lovely. And just that thing, like you say, about grounding, and it really helps us to be present. And I love that. I think presence, I speak about that all the time, about that's it, basically. Just do everything you can to stay present. And I also love, drawing a tarot card for the day, just to see, like, what should I look out for, or what can I think about, or what does the card stir in my mind? I love that. So I just want you to let us know, like, where can people find you if they want to find your work?
Well, they can go to my website, majorarqueerna.com. That's majorarqueerna.com. That is where you'll find my blog and some of my early writings about queer Kabbalah. You'll find many links to pre-order the book. I also, for those who either can't afford or don't want to purchase the book because they're trying to minimize tangible stuff in their life, I also encourage people to request it at their local library, because that makes it available for even more people to read. So I have links for how to do that as well. And in addition, I have a couple of very popular posts that are kind of ally tips for people who have trans or non-binary people in their life and want to learn more about, well, why are they declaring themselves to be this when they're, 30, 40, 50 years old? Why didn't they decide this when they were younger? I have a whole metaphor for that that people have found really helpful. I call it the itchy sweater metaphor. So people can check that out. And also, people can find, here's how to respond when you get someone's pronouns wrong without making things worse, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's really helpful. I think that's really helpful.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And I'm going to put your website in the show notes in case anyone missed that.
All right.
It's been really lovely talking to you, and I wish you all the best, and I hope you get those 20 minutes. I don't know. It's just going to be fantastic, and I hope you get everything you can possibly squeeze in there for everyone.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be part of this conference.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. To find out everything you need to know about the conference, please visit goddessconference.com. And to find out more about me, your host, you can find me at elinhale.com. That's elinhejll.com. And also at the Stockholm Goddess Temple on social media. See you next time.